Phil Hendry.
All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And when we leave the air each and every evening and morning, we always go over to the website and post a log of the day's that night's show, so you can go over and check out and see what's been happening. And also, the following day, a podcast of our radio show, that is our radio show minus the commercials, is always posted on our website, and you can access that and subscribe to it, and it's downloaded automatically. That's why it's called a podcast. I got my ass kicked real good once because I didn't use the term podcast properly, you know.
Well, what is a podcast?
A podcast is something that is automatically delivered to your pod, whatever you're using, iPod, their pod, his pod, somebody's pod, or your iPhone. But they don't call it a phone cast. It's a podcast. But it has to be one that is automatically downloaded, I believe.
What do you mean automatically? Like, you don't have to do it?
That you do not have to manually go download it. Otherwise, it's not a podcast. Now, we do call our Milwaukee Lion Games podcasts, even though they are not automatically downloaded, I don't think, yet. But I just do that just to piss people off. And so there you go. You know, words, when we are in the very beginning stages, the infancy of a word, it's going to become what it's going to become. You can't pass a law and say, now it's going to be this. You know, as popular use dictates, that's what the meaning of that word's going to be. And then it becomes something consistent, and eventually it is known as that thing.
Well, I don't know what you like. What word?
Podcast. Podcast. Podcast is what? To most people, I think podcast now means any audio that one can access at any time. It doesn't have to necessarily be on the radio. You can go to the internet and you can get a audio presentation of something. A podcast. Now, I'm sure that there are people that could lecture me ad nauseum about why that's wrong. And that's good for you, and I'm glad to hear that you're keeping busy. But the word is going to mean what the word means. And while I've tried to adhere to the actual meaning of the word podcast, which is, why am I wasting all this time?
I don't know, but I'm about to fall asleep over here.
Yeah, let's just forget about it.
All right, sorry.
No, I thought it was interesting. I thought that what a podcast mean. Who cares what a podcast mean and what it don't mean? I'm very concerned, and you've not really gone into it, but I'm concerned about Gwellit and where that's all going.
Talking about the dumb demon?
That was what Father McCordis was talking about, and then you drove him off the air like a refugee.
I didn't drive him off the air.
Well, you sort of did.
No, I did not. We came to the end of the hour. That's the end of that. I'm not talking to him. I don't like this taking guests from 1 hour into the next. Very bad radio. It's bad methodology. It's bad, bad, bad. I know the audience probably wants me to explain that, but I don't want to explain it, okay? I want that to just to be our little thing.
What do you mean about methodology?
I just got done saying I don't want to explain it.
Well, you don't want to bring one guest from 1 hour into another hour. Why? Because it...
I think it kills audience more than the average stuff that we do around here, okay? God knows we probably kill audience anyway, but I mean, from going from one part of the hour to another hour with the same guest, people are, listening habits are that people will tune in oftentimes at the top of an hour because they think something's beginning. And if you are talking about something at the beginning of an hour that they don't know what the hell it is you're talking about, like what I'm talking about right now, for instance, we're slaughtering audience left and right. We're just murdering them. We're if this radio show was a house with sandbags in front of it, the audience would be the bodies that we're just tossing out the front door.
And what about the cops out front? That's the FCC, right?
Yes, the cops out front of the FCC, the audience of the bodies we're throwing out, and the show is the house that we're in. And that house, by the way, is inhabited by the SLA.
Yay!
So the house will burn to the ground.
Yes, yes. The house will burn to the ground, and the escaping show members, which would be you and me and Bud, will be shot as we are crawling out from underneath the house to try to make our way to safety.
That was about the most black and depressing thing I have ever heard.
It's also pretty funny.
I vote for funny. It's black and depressing, but it's funny.
Well, the only thing black and depressing is my aunt.
I'm going to tell your aunt you said that. Phil Hendry Show here, 877-876-PHIL. We do have some outer space news above and beyond Robert's, aunt. This is stuff that's happening in...
What about this port? I want to know more about the shooting in Portland. Tell me more about the shooting in Portland.
No.
Why not?
I don't want to talk about it.
Everyone's talking about it. It's very important. We simply must know more about the shooting in Portland.
No, we're not going to know any more about the shooting in Portland. I'm not going to talk about the shooting in Portland. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to allow it to become another de facto discussion on gun control. I'm not going to allow, and I'm not going to make this mistake. I made this mistake after the Aurora thing. I'm not making it ever again. I'm not going to discuss mental illness because that just really pisses off people that are opposed to national health care because they think I'm trying to wedge that argument, you know.
Oh, but you don't want a discussion about gun control.
Well, Margaret, I think you'd be on my side with this one, right? You're in favor of national health care. I am, right?
Yes.
What do you mean you're in favor of national health care? What's that got to do with about a guy with a shooting people?
Because the guy's nuts, that's why. Because the cat's nuts. And because if we had some place for these nuts to go and get medicated, maybe he ain't nuts. Maybe the guy is a psychopath. I don't know. But I ain't talking about it. Period.
So you're just going to allow these things to happen?
Margaret, I don't allow them to happen. I'm a citizen, a law-abiding citizen, on the radio, talking as intelligently as I can to as intelligently as audience I can find, with very intelligent people like you. And we're doing what we're doing. I don't control the events in this country any more than a flip of the coin does, any more than anybody else does. I just do my radio show, and I try to get out of here in one piece. I got my own problems. Thank you very much.
I don't know, Mr. Henry, that sounds very self-serving. It does in a lot of ways, Mr. Henry, if you think about it.
Is that right? Well, I'm not going to think about it.
Think about it, though.
Yes, think about it, Phil.
I'm not thinking about it.
But if you think about it...
I'm not thinking about it. Okay, what?
You're on the radio, and okay, yeah, sure, I'll grant you... that what you do is a satirizing, okay?
Uh-huh.
But if a serious thing is going to happen, then you should say about it.
I agree with that. Don't look as if you're better than everyone else, Mr. Henry.
Bud, thank you for your opinion. Thank you very much. But no, I reject it, and I'll tell you why. For the longest time, I have recognized that talk radio doesn't change anything. As a matter of fact, talk radio adds to the confusion and the pollution of our airwaves. I'm the only one saying this because I'm honest and I'm truthful and I'm forthright, just like the Boy Scouts taught me to be. So I'm not going to pretend like we're going to change minds on this show. I'm going to just come on the air, spit out whatever it is I've got to spit out, and then wave goodbye and prance off into, as it were, the sunrise or sunset, depending upon which time of the day it is when you're hearing the show. And that, my friend, is that.
Well, you know what I got to say to that?
What?
Ah, bean fart.
Well, you dirty...
Ow, ow!
That was funny.
Let it go, bud. Ow!
Oh, yeah, that was real funny. Real, get out of here.
I didn't really fart.
Get out of here. What a punk.
Well, Phil, it needed some comment.
Well, and that's what the guy comes up with, huh? Ah, bean fart.
It didn't really fart. All you gotta do is take a whiff.
I don't care. You're a child. You're a child in a man's game. You understand? This is a man's game. You are a little boy.
Well, sometimes, Phil, you're the little boy.
All right, well, then I'm a little boy in a little boy's game when I'm the little boy. But when I'm not a little boy and I'm a man, this is a man's game, and he's the little boy
in a little boy game.
In a man's game. It's a little boy's game when I'm the little boy.
What about when he's a man?
Then he's a man in a little boy's game. 8-7, let's take a break.
Yeah, I really think you need to break. I think you need to have Dan. Dan should put a tape up.
No, he's not putting any tape up. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. The Hubble Telescope is giving scientists a look at the older galaxy, the oldest galaxies ever seen, dating back some, get a load of this, 13.3 billion years, providing a glimpse into how the cosmos must have looked right after the Big Bang. NASA scientists announced on Wednesday that Hubble has uncovered never-before-seen primitive galaxies dating back to when the universe was less than 4% of its current age. These archaeological images from Hubble were gleaned from an intensely studied patch of sky known as the ultra-deep field. A team of astronomers led by Richard Ellis at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena, using Hubble's Wide Field Camera 3, the WFC-3, to peer deeper into space than any previous Hubble observation. Hubble scientists said the most recent, the most ancient of the seven new galaxies came into being about 13.3 billion years ago, some 380 million years after the Big Bang. Now that is, in terms of the universe's life, nothing. It's less than a billion years after the universe was born. And the reason why they can see into the past, if you will, folks, it's a very, very simple explanation. Light takes time to get to our eyes. We know that light travels at, what is the speed of light, Dan, per second? It's 186,000 miles per second. 186,000 miles per second is fast, and yet it still takes time to travel a certain distance. We now know, of course, that there is light that we see in the sky from the sun that takes 8 minutes to get to us. So technically, the image of the sun you're looking at is 8 minutes old. That's not a big thing, and we don't look at it that way. We always, oh, there's the sun, and the sun is what it is. But it's actually the sun 8 minutes ago. When we look at the sky at night and we see stars twinkling from afar, we're looking at some stars that have been, in some instances, that are dead now, and the light we're seeing is light from a star that is long dead.
What? How's that possible?
Are you listening to what I'm saying here, man? Because it takes time. Light travels at the speed of 186,000 miles a second, or 700 million miles an hour. Thank you, Dan. 700 million miles an hour.
All right, 700 million miles an hour. That means that... What?
Never mind. Look, I don't know. It's 700 million miles an hour. So how many million... So a billion miles, it would take the light over an hour to travel. A billion miles. Light, in other words, has such long distances to travel in space that we now call... We don't call it a distance of miles. We call it a light year. We don't say that star is 85 billion trillion gazillion miles away. We say it's 9 light years, meaning it took 9 years for the light from that star to reach our eyes. This is what's so immense about the universe. This is the thing that just blows our minds. And this is, by the way, why people argue if we're ever really going to explore the universe, we're going to need some kind of vehicle that travels at the speed of light.
Yeah, on Star Trek they do, and I know it's fake, I know it, but they do now have on Star Trek, what's it called?
Yeah, they got a warp coil.
Oh, that's a lot of hogwash, everyone knows.
Well,
I don't know warp coil, bud. What's a warp coil?
Yeah, the guys that wrote the show studied on it.
Oh, get out of here. If they studied on anything, I don't know. I mean, but the fact is, it takes years. So now what Hubble has done is photographed these patches of sky showing light that comes not 1 light year or 1,000 light years or even 1 billion light years. This is light that is coming from 13.3 billion light years. Well, is it light years? Well, it's 13.3 billion years ago that light existed, that we're seeing now. Now, how many light years that is, I don't know. They're simply saying, dating back 13.3 billion years. If a light year is, in point of fact, the amount of time that it takes light to reach our eyes, then we can say that that was 13.3 billion years ago. Is that what that is?
I don't know, Phil. You're asking the wrong person. If you want to ask me, what did Tom Hanks have for lunch yesterday?
What did Tom Hanks have for lunch yesterday?
I don't know. God, what an idiot taking me.
All right, well, but the point is, you're looking at stuff that no longer exists. So we're seeing light coming from the very beginning of the universe. That's what we're talking about. We are identifying light that is so far away that it is literally light reflecting finally to us. It's finally reaching our eyes, taking all those years to reach our eyes and originating back at the very birth of our universe. It's amazing. It's astounding. It's, I'm telling you, it's almost scary, the things we don't know. And I, you know, it finally just kind of occurred to me the other day. I was thinking, you know how people say, if mankind vanishes, who will ever know and who will ever care? And that's the end of that. And I think it's a great thought, and it's very heavy and it's very existential and all that. But the fact is, it's true. I mean, think about it. If this planet blows up tomorrow, let's say, who cares? I mean, take a look at the size of this freaking universe we're in, man. Somebody's going to, if there is anybody else out there, this, did you hear about this thing that, I don't know, I caught a puff on the telescope. I don't know what the hell it was. That's it. That's the end of it. All of our books, all of our learning, all of our religion, all of our heaviosity, all the stuff we think is so bitching, we're done, man. No one cares. No one knows. That's the end of that. And I think that's ultimately the great story of life. That's why we talk about humility. Just be here, learn what you can, and then you're dead, and don't make a big deal out of it, Jack.
Well, that's easy for you to say, Phil, but there are a great many of us that want to achieve things for the ages that will be long remembered.
Remembered by who if the planet blows up?
Yeah, see?
Just, excuse me, no one's talking to you. Remembered by who if the planet blows up? What do you mean if the planet blows up?
If the planet is gone, if the human race is gone, if we're all gone, who's gonna know and who's gonna care?
The people that were here, our writings will survive. Our film, our video libraries. I don't understand what he means.
Yeah, but Margaret, if the planet's gone, there ain't gonna be no video library.
Would you please just back off? You're spitting on me.
All right. If the planet's gone, there won't be no video library.
Yeah.
Well, you're spitting on me. Would you tell him to back off?
Hey, Robert, but do you hear what he's saying?
Yes, he's saying there's not going to be there'll always be record of man. Man and only man has achieved what we've achieved. Yes, I believe in God. But God saw fit to have a contract with man. We have an agreement with God. You understand that, don't you?
According to our religion, yes.
And the contract we have with God, that is, but Robert and Bud, think about that.
Yeah, so God will, what if he goes back on it?
Yeah, what if he breaches the contract or something?
What if God breaches the contract?
Yeah, that's a good question. What if God does breach the contract? What if God finally says, you know what, I'm tearing it up? And even if we have a contract with God, which I guess we do.
You guess we do. You, the Catholic boy.
Look, I was raised Catholic. It doesn't mean that I necessarily... What I'm saying is, all right, let's say the Testament, the Covenant, all that stuff. We have an agreement with God, right?
Yes.
We have an agreement with God that we will do this and so, and then he agrees that he'll do thus and so, and the agreement is cool. All right, great. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't keep us from blowing ourselves to bits. And then no one will know anything about it.
If we have an agreement with God, do you honestly believe we're going to be blown to bits? Do you think God would dare? We are people that he decided he should go into business with, if you want to get right down to it. And he is going to stab us in the back? If I were God, I'd have a care.
What does he care? Are you kidding? He's the guy that made us.
Yeah, God, he could do anything he wants.
I'm just saying, if God has a covenant with us, and then he decides, well, I think I'll kill them. You know, that's what...
What? What does he care? He doesn't care. What's the revenge you're going to take on God?
Someone somewhere will know. The record...
What record, Margaret? If the planet blows to bits, man. It's not... There's no record. It's done. No one's going to know we had a covenant with God. No one's going to give a damn. They won't even know what God is. If we're talking about some civilization, and let's hope there's another civilization. What if we are the only one?
Oh, that's absolutely absurd.
No. No, it's not absurd. No, it's not absurd. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're pointing at the camera like you're on TV.
I am. Hey, we'll be right back.
Yeah, all right. All right. All right.
You really ought to be ashamed of yourself the way you're talking. Are you saying God's...
I'm saying God's going to do what he wants to do.
And he's going to... You know, some people don't walk away from deals like that.
Yeah. You're out of your mind, Margaret. If you think it's out.
Phil Hendry.
You know, I shouldn't say, but I'm just looking at this thing on Military Channel. You know, there isn't anything more badass on this planet than these early films from World War II of Marines hitting the beach at Iwo Jima with zinc oxide on their faces, you know?
What?
I'm telling you, I just saw these Marines, and obviously these guys are now veterans of the island-hopping battles that the Marine Corps fought in the Pacific, not taking anything away from the Army in Europe or the Army in the Pacific. But when you look at these Marines on these films that I watch, these are these documentaries.
Well, these are the World War II color.
Yeah, the Military Channel and the History Channel have now come up with these colorized images, which I think is great. I know there's a lot of people who say,
you know, artistically, the black and white.
Well, we're talking about a documentary piece of footage that shows black and white images because that was the film available to those men at that time. But some of them were shot in color. But they have, and I never quite saw these. I just saw some pictures of these Marines, and I believe they were on their way to Iwo Jima. And they were in those landing craft that the Marines used that had mounted machine guns on the front. We'd learned an awful lot. The Marines had learned a hell of a lot about this kind of amphibious war and amphibious landings that they were forced into making by way of the so-called battlefield. And so by the time they got to Iwo Jima and places like that, Okinawa, they had these landing craft with these mounted machine guns. They had all kinds of extra armor. They were, you know, definitely ready to hit the beach. The guys on D-Day, I don't know if they had that similar kind of thing. But anyway, they were showing these documentary bits of film of the Marines, and they got zinc oxide on their faces, cigarettes hanging out of their mouths, you know, kind of wrapping their dog tags up, talking, chewing gum, and you're looking at guys. I know they're scared. I mean, because they tell you that they're scared. The guys that survived will say we were scared every minute. But for all intents and purposes, they look like guys that are about to go scuba diving or surfing or something.
Well, that's the nature. As my uncle, who was a Marine, said, that's a Marine. And there's no explaining them. You can't get into it. You don't even want to talk to them about it.
Did you ever talk to your uncle about it?
No. No, I listened, but I didn't talk. I didn't say, oh, Uncle Dewey, can you tell me?
Your uncle's name is Dewey.
Yeah, well, you go up to my Uncle Dewey and make fun of him and see what he says.
Easy, bud, okay?
No, I'm not disrespecting him. It's just that his name is Dewey.
Dewey? Yes, that was his name, Uncle Dewey. And he talked about being in the Marine Corps, and he was in World War II, but I never asked him. I waited for him to talk about it, then we would...
Did he talk about it much?
No, he didn't. But he was at a lot of those places you mentioned. He was at, I forget, what was it called? Gunawa? Guganawa?
Okinawa.
No, that was not where he was. He was at Guga something.
Oh, come on, Margaret. You and I always have this discussion. Every time I give you the right name, it's Guga something, you know.
Yeah, Okinawa's a place.
All right, it was Okinawa. I thought it was Gugu something.
Gugu?
Oh, no, that was the name of the bird. There was a Goonie bird or something? I don't know.
Anyway, so, yeah, I was looking at these guys, and they got their zinc oxide. It is Iwo Jima, because there's this flag going up right now. All right, enough of that nonsense. Now then, as Dan and I were sitting here kicking it around, we have come to the realization and the belief, a very firm belief, and it won't take much to move us off of this, though. That's how really convinced we are. Not much. But we do believe 13.3 billion light years means 13.3 billion years. That's, in other words, that's how long it took the light. If it's a light year, It's the distance that it takes light to travel in a year. So if it's the distance that it takes light to travel in a year, then that's how many years? I don't know. But here is a story that I think will clarify it for somebody out there. Maybe not me. Most likely not me. But some of you guys listening, you might get it. The universe is filled with stuff, says the article, and a lot of it is very, very far away. But now scientists have a new record holder for the furthest galaxy from Earth's. NASA scientists found galaxy MACSO647-JD. That's the name of it.
Why do they give it such an asinine...
Yeah, who's going to remember that?
They'll give it another name. Right now, they just got to give it a name.
Yeah, well, how come the guy use all a number? Why just call Galaxy 4?
Because maybe they already got a Galaxy 4. Remember what we said about Reservoir Dogs? You're not going to be Mr. Purple. Some other guy in another job is named Mr. Purple.
What?
Anyway, NASA scientists found galaxy MACSO647-JD by using the Hubble and Spitzer space telescopes. The young-looking galaxy is approximately 13.3 billion light-years away. A light-year is the distance of how light travels in 1 year in a vacuum. In a vacuum, meaning not through any atmosphere, but in the vacuum of space. So that would be slightly different if we were asking ourselves how long does it take light to travel, say, on Earth, which is not in a vacuum.
Well, now you're losing me.
No, never mind. It's not that big of a deal. Light travels at 186,282 miles per second, and a single light year is about 6 trillion miles. A single light year is 6 trillion miles. So in layman's terms, this galaxy is around 79.8 trillion miles away from Earth. A single light year is 6 trillion miles, right? So if you divide 6 into 69.8 trillion miles, you get roughly 13.
Wait a minute. How far away is the galaxy?
13.3 billion miles.
No, but I'm saying the galaxy. I'm using the poetic pronunciation. How far away is the galaxy? Meaning God. You know...
Will you shut up?
Well, I don't...
Give me that pronunciation thing, Margaret. I'm trying to do... We're doing some science here, okay? Now, what the hell do they mean? I give up.
No, there's got to be a way to figure it out.
I give up. I'm not going to figure it out, man. 6 trillion miles away is one light year. It's 79, so there's one light year of 6 trillion miles. So if I divide 79.8 trillion miles, that gives me how many light years away from Earth this galaxy is. That would be 6 trillion going into 79. Oh, maybe it comes out to 13.3 billion.
Well, now, give him a cigar.
No, it wouldn't. It would come out to more like 13.3 trillion. That's what it would come out to. I'm no wonder people don't understand this stuff. If people understood this stuff, then people would be more amenable to supporting further exploration of space. But when you start talking to us in these, and when you get CBS to try to explain stuff, NASA and JPL and all of you scientists and eggheads, if you got CBS trying to interpret... You cats are lost already, man. If I were you, I would contract with someone that speaks English. This is some writer for CBS.
Well, why are you blaming them, Phil? I mean, they're trying.
I don't care. They're not explaining it very well. One of the things that I learned from a dear friend of mine that went into the technical writing field, I've got a very good friend of mine, didn't go into the technical writing field, but he studied technical writing in college. You want to know why? Because he realized that instruction manuals, directions, warnings, descriptions of things. In other words, technical writing is not creative writing. It's technical. It's, this is a liquid that will do this and this and this and this. Here are the instructions on how to play Monopoly, and so on and so forth. No one knows how to write those. We got nothing but idiots that write those. God bless them, I guess, for trying, but the fact is I'd rather you not even try if you don't know how to do it. And you have people that write instructions for things, or they write descriptions for things, and they don't know what the hell it is they're doing. Now, it's one thing to write an article for a newspaper. Okay, I get it. You know, it's up to me to do my own research, and I've always believed that. But here I am on the radio trying to glean from CBS a news source that one would think, anyway.
Yeah, you just gotta live with it, man. There ain't nothing you gotta be able to do about it.
Yeah, can't do nothing about it, man. Just gotta live in it, man. It's their world. All we're doing is scrubbing the skid marks out.
It is true, Phil. It's their world, and all we're doing is scrubbing the skid... What did you say?
Never mind.
My God!
All right, never mind.
Well, it's true!
No, it ain't true. So anyway, that's the story of that galaxy. Where's that other spaceman stuff we had?
You want to get up on this?
I don't want to talk about this crap anymore. We got one more?
Yeah, I got another Martian story over here.
What does he mean, Martian story?
There's another story that we have on some outer space thing. They found something on a... Oh, here it is. They found a river on one of the moons of Saturn, a moon called Titan. Scientists with NASA's Cassini mission...
Now, there was an Oleg Cassini who was a fashion designer. I know that's not what this is, but are they related?
No, I don't think they're related. The Cassini, I don't know who the Cassini is in this. We'll look it up. We got a lot of stuff to look up here, and we only got about 20 minutes left in the show. Scientists with NASA's Cassini mission have spotted what appears to be a miniature version of the Nile River on Saturn's largest moon, Titan. The 400-kilometer, or 250-mile-long feature, from headwaters to a large sea, is the longest extraterrestrial river ever to be discovered and imagined to such a high resolution. Image to such a high resolution. There must be pictures of it. In comparison, the Nile River in Egypt is 4,132 miles long. So the Nile River on Earth beats the crap out of this one on Saturn. Using Cassini's radar imaging instruments, the scientists were able to deduce that the feature is indeed a river, as the dark, smooth surface within the meanders meanders and channels suggest the presence of a liquid. Titan is known to have vast seas, the only other body in the solar system apart from Earth to possess a cycle of liquids on its surface. However, the thick Titan atmosphere is a frigid one, meaning liquid water couldn't possibly flow. The liquids on Titan are therefore composed of hydrocarbons such as methane and ethane.
What? They're not flowing?
No. They're flowing, but it isn't water. It's methane and ethane. That's what's flowing. Because the atmosphere is so cold, water couldn't flow, so it's some other kind of solution. I mean, really, what we're looking at in our solar system are various states of evolution of planets. And it just so happens we live on the one, you know...
Yeah, that's lucky.
It's not lucky. That's... What do you mean lucky?
What do you figure the odds are that we'd be on the one planet that we can breathe on and everything?
It's why we're here, man. What do you mean lucky?
No, but what do you say, man? How lucky can you be?
We ain't lucky, Jack. We wouldn't be here if the planet wasn't already ready to support life.
That's not luck. That is the result of the sustainability of life on this planet.
Yeah, they're using big words. That means they don't know.
Yeah. You don't understand how, we got lucky.
We didn't get lucky, man. We didn't get lucky. We're here because the planet is able to sustain life, like Margaret was saying, okay? But what the rest of these planets in the solar system represent are varying stages of the evolution of, if you will, planets, the solar system, and so forth. Earth, at one point, was probably a lot like Saturn. It had ethane and methane and all this crap on it that you couldn't live through, man, if you had all the contracts with God in the world. You wouldn't be able to live through this stuff.
God would let you live. If God wants you to breathe ethane...
Yeah, what about if God had us breathe ethane?
Then we'd be breathing ethane.
See? That's what I'm saying.
No, you ain't saying anything, man. You guys haven't said anything since the show started. If we were ethane-breathing animals, then that's what we would be.
What would we look like?
We'd probably have, like, oxygen tank for heads or something like that.
Is that possible?
What?
That we would have heads that look like oxygen tanks?
Yeah, it probably would, given because of the way that we evolved.
How do you know what we'd look like? How do you know?
Well, it stands to reason if God made us to breathe ethane.
Okay, so God makes us to breathe ethane. Why does that mean our heads look like...
See, you can't take nothing serious.
Oh, get out of here, man. How do you know that makes our heads look like oxygen tanks?
All right, I'm done. I'm sick.
Oh, give me a break, will you, Margaret?
I'm going to the toilet.
Good, you go to the toilet.
What are you laughing about?
Are you out of your mind or something, man? You don't even know why you said what you said. If God... Do we have to break, Dan? Please say yes. Oh, thank God. Yeah, thank God.
Boy, what do you... Yeah, see, you're losing the argument, man.
I'm not losing anything, man. I just don't want to get into an argument about why it is our heads aren't shaped like oxygen tanks. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, see, truth is our bitch, and you don't even want to... You don't even want to have truth be the bitch.
Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back here to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Bud, why are you looking up barbecue places?
Because I just want to see if they sell. When you said you had to get that gas for the barbecue.
Yeah, propane.
Yes, all right, what about that? Now, you were laughing at Bud and you were laughing at me. But we're talking about methane and ethane-based life. Wouldn't the heads look, well...
Margaret, if you're going to try to get me into this, I'm going to laugh again, okay?
Yeah, but look.
Yeah, I'm looking at the methane tank on that barbecue, that big round ball.
Yeah.
And you think that the guys that live on a planet where methane...
No, propane.
Just because that's how we store propane doesn't mean that that's how our heads are going to look if we...
All right, you know something, I'm...
Go ahead, Margaret.
Can I leave early?
No, but you can go to the bathroom again.
Well, so in other words, I'm trapped.
Yeah, welcome to the show. Welcome to doing a radio show. Welcome to doing a radio show. No, you don't just... If I could just get up and leave, believe me, I would have been gone and you would... there wouldn't have been hide nor hair of me for years.
Well, isn't that an interesting revelation?
If I got to sit here and listen to you guys talking about, hey, if there's life on another planet and it breathes methane, doesn't it stand to reason the guy's head is going to look like a barbecue?
Shut up!
Yeah, Mr. That's not very nice.
Oh, get out. Are you guys nuts? Of course I'm going to laugh, bud. You got to learn that some of the stuff that comes out of your face is pretty whack.
Some of the stuff that comes out of my face is whack. The stuff that comes out of your cake hole, man, it takes a world record for numbnut. Tell you that.
Watch your language. And I'll tell you something else, man. This whole idea about some guy's head looking like a barbecue or...
We didn't say barbecue. We said propane tank. All right, we'll drop it. You want to laugh? Go ahead.
Of course I'm laughing, Margaret. Of course I am. I dare you to take your theory anywhere. I dare you to take your theory to JPL, take it to any place, anywhere.
What if I... Well...
What, you want to take it down to the barbecue place? Why don't you ask those guys first?
No, we were talking about going to Caltech tomorrow.
Be my guest. I would love it. Go to Caltech tomorrow. Talk to the guys, whoever you find. Ask them about life and evolution. Ask them what our heads would look like if all we breathed was propane. And then tell them that your theory is our heads would look like barbecues.
I didn't say barbecue. I said an oxygen tank.
And I said a round propane tank. You keep grinning like that, Phil, and one of these days someone's going to...
Wipe that grin off my face. Sound like my dad now. All right, folks.
Well, we're going tomorrow.
Good. Go to Caltech. That's great.
You even know where Caltech is?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I do know where Caltech is. I used to hang out there when I was in high school. I used to... You wouldn't believe what I did at Caltech when I was a kid. I used to crawl up into this bell tower they had there and smoke cigarettes and stare at the people.
You did what?
I swear to God, me and a friend of mine, just some days, you know, we'd walk over, because he lived around the corner from Caltech. This is big campus on Del Mar Avenue there in Pasadena. And they had a library, and they, in later years, I used to go to Beckham Auditorium, or is it Beckman, I forget.
Well, I think it's Beckman. I've never been there, but I would just...
Okay, fine.
Well, Phil, you're not the only one with all the answers.
I understand. In later years, I used to go to Beckman Auditorium to watch the jazz concerts, and I went to a few gigs there. Anyway, long story short, there was a bell tower or some kind of a tower there that we've discovered, and we went up into this thing, and we would hang out there and just, you know, smoke cigs like young, ruffian, stupid kids and laugh and point, and, you know, it was kind of a cool place to just go.
That was on Caltech.
That was on the Caltech campus, yeah. And this was years and years ago, man. Now I dare say they probably don't allow just anybody to walk on campus. I mean, this was back in a time when you could just walk on campus, use the library if you wanted to. I don't know if you could check out books, but you could go and look at books. Nobody hassled you. It was pretty interesting. And being on the campus of Caltech, of course, you're sitting there thinking, wow, there's all these geniuses, you know.
Well, did they all have the bad skin and that kind of thing? No.
No, they didn't. A lot of them looked like regular guys, you know, and women. All right, that's the end of this. I can't do any more damage than I've done. Margaret and Bud are going to Caltech tomorrow to find out what our heads look like.
Shut up!
Well, that's what you said, didn't you?
Yeah, but you gotta make it sound better.
I'll do it. We will be back tomorrow evening, ladies and gentlemen, to report on what we find out from the Life Sciences Department at Caltech. Thank you and have a very pleasant good evening. Except for you, Phil. I hope you go to...
Go to hell?
I didn't say that, but...
That's what you meant.
I didn't say that.
Anyway, the Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Henry. And don't forget, we're online at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Get a Backstage Pass. Join us. Won't you be a member of our Backstage Pass family? Until tonight at 10 o'clock, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Henry.